Welcome to The Rink, your weekly source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tablake Graylian. It's time for another Tweetcast, and I have two great guests this time, Matt from Columbus and James from Denver. No relation. Find out what's on the minds of other hockey fans on The Rink. My first call of the evening was to Matt, also on Twitter, known as BZ Archer. Matt is a Columbus Blue Jackets fan, and I was telling Matt that the Blue Jackets are kind of becoming my Nashville Predators in a way. They're that team that I always kind of nagging in the background, but I really don't know a lot about, and they certainly have been struggling this season.
It's weird. It's kind of been the story of the whole season for them, really. We get efforts like the 3-0 shutout of Florida, where the defense really seemed sharp. Mason really seemed like he had a handle on things. And then they turn around, they have a pretty tight game in Nashville. You know, they go to a shootout. It's like, okay, all right. You know, three points out, 4-0 back-to-back. That's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go and they kind of lay an egg against Anaheim on Saturday, and then tonight they're just making all these ugly defensive breakdowns. And it seems like they can't really find a consistency.
Well, you were consistency seems to be I know that's a problem with a lot of teams around the league. And I mean, is that where do you think? I mean, a lot of people like to look at Ken Hitchcock and say, well, is it coming from there? You know, is Ken Hitchcock already lost the room?
No. Yeah, I've heard the same thing, but I don't think so, because if that was the case, I think you'd see more problems in the locker room, to be honest. I think it would be more obvious if he was losing the room. I think the biggest thing, the defense has had just this massive cavalcade of injuries. I mean, you start the year without Mike Commodore, Jan Hatta. You get Hatta back, Commodore comes back, gets hurt again. You get Commodore back, Rusty Kleslo goes down in what was just a horrific and very unfortunate situation where he got hit and suffered a couple of torn muscles. You know, and Kleslo really has become a rock for this team. I know when he was drafted, there was a lot of talk about how, oh, he could become a great offensive player. He had a really good couple of years in the queue. He's never really been that offensive guy, but he reinvented himself into being a very, very stable, foundational guy. And without him, I think that's a big reason for some of the struggles.
Hmm. Well, what about, I'm just looking at the stats right now. I mean, Fedor Tuten is a guy who I would think just, you know, has to really step it up. And the guy, I mean, he has 15 assists, which is, you know, that's not bad. But no. He's -7 right now. Is that indicative of his defensive play right now?
It is, because we've been seeing, he's a player who really seemed to be making some strides last year about uniting that offensive game with the more responsible Hitchcock-style play.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, he's been guilty of a lot of really questionable turnovers. We had a horrible one, actually, in this game. Jackets are on the power play. Tuten's working the point. First, he takes what I'd call a pretty ill-advised shot right into the legs of Shea Weber that then rebounds out of the zone. And then when Weber pursues the puck, Tuten tries to kind of, I don't even know if he was thinking he was getting in his way, but the end result was he basically drifted into the corner while Weber was free to drive to the net. Plays like that have unfortunately been kind of common. He's just been, I'm not trying to dog the guy, because he has had days where he's played pretty well,
mm-hmm.
but you just see a lot of turnovers, a lot of frustrating play. And the other one would be Mark Methot, who kind of pushed his way onto the team last year. He had a very good training camp. He came out with a little bit of attitude. He got a lot of interesting press in the Columbus media by telling them in training camp, well, I either want to be playing for this team or I want to be traded.
Mm.
He didn't want to go down to the minors. He's been, last year he seemed to click with Kleslo again. And you know, Kleslo again, you know, kind of see a theme here. But this year he's been asked to be more of a stay-at-home guy. He's been asked to be a solid partner for guys like Tuten or Chris Russell. to kind of act as an anchoring player and a lot of positional problems. I noticed that on two of the goals tonight that Nashville scored, you had Nathot directly screening Mason instead of clearing the crease out, and not surprisingly, the shots came out right, basically right between Nathot and Mason to go in.
Yikes. Yeah, it my the most news that I've seen basically from the Blue Jackets this year seems to be the whole Nikita Filatov situation. And
yes,
it's amazing how that turned from a something that had a lot of fans. He was a guy that had a lot of fans really excited about the prospects, and that just seems to have turned into a really, really bad situation.
I think it's a situation where Filatov as a person seems to have a great love of playing, seems to have a great love of competition. And that said, I don't think he quite has the maturity to understand sometimes decisions are being made that he may not like, but they're not because of any personal dislike or any personal animosity. But this is the system, and this is the way the team is playing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know certainly if he's demanding top 6 minutes, the first problem I have is there should be top 6 forwards that he's coming into or out of, depending on the situation, you know? Mm-hmm. You can't demand, I want to play on the top 6 line while you have two, you know, 6 forwards that are clicking and we're playing well. And during the early part of the season, despite or because of the defensive issues, you know, the Jackets were responding by, well, we're letting in 4 goals a game, so we're going to go out and score 6.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had Rick Nash leading the scoring race. He's still up there at this point. You had Anton Vermette and Christian Husalius popping a lot of goals in. You have Jake Voracek having a quiet but very huge sophomore season, in my opinion. He's been racking assists up. He's got 8 goals on the year already, which is quite good. He's eating up something like 16 minutes a night, and he's playing on all, you know, the penalty kill and the power play. If Filatov wants to play on those lines, who do you take out?
Yeah.
And instead of accepting that, and, you know, I admit, did Ken Hitchcock use him perfectly? No, I'm sure he didn't. Hitch tended to put his fourth and third lines together and try to fit Filatov in there to try to help him get the defensive side of things, and I'm not necessarily sure that's something that Filatov responds to. The old joke, everybody learns a little differently. But that said, when the offer is, you know, you're going to be playing in the NHL, but you're going to be playing lesser minutes, or we can put you in the AHL, and maybe you won't be playing at quite a high level, but we'll give you those top 6 minutes, I think it shows a certain lack of maturity to say, instead of those options, I want you to send me back to Russia.
My question then is, you know, is this so basically what, in a way, what you're saying is that Filatov is asking to be treated almost like a veteran player on the team. And in reality, he's still a prospect.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of grumblings that he kind of forced the issue of making the NHL roster this year with the talk of, I'm not sure if you saw this or not, but during the off season, he was interviewed by Sovietsky Sport, and one of their writers spoke to him and said, you know, what are your plans for going to training camp? And he said, well, I intend to make the team, but if I don't make it in the NHL, I'm certainly going to consider my options, and I know that I'll always have a home with CSKA Moskva. So that put, I think, a lot of undue pressure on the Blue Jackets, knowing that he would be willing to jump if he wasn't happy.
Right. That's a, that's kind of a bridge burner right there.
Yeah, and I think they did a good job of trying to work with it. I mean, it's kind of that 6 and 1/2 dozen of the other, where he's playing to the Russian media and he's playing to the American media, and I think he's trying to be very careful about what he says to both sides. He doesn't want to burn his bridges in Russia, because obviously, as we've seen, he knows that if he isn't happy in North America, he can pretty much come back and get a guaranteed paycheck at any time. But I do think he does believe that the competition's better in North America, and he wants to play in the North American game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've made that exact same mistake before. You know, of saying, "Hey, this is where I think I should be, and this is what I want to be." And you know, it's kind of a youthful mistake to make. Yeah,
and it's one of those things where I'd hope that perhaps a year, you know, the Malone was through the end of this season in the KHL. Perhaps he'll come back to Columbus with some perspective. Perhaps he will kind of play it out and say, okay, I don't get as good a competition in Russia. This is a better league. Try to make it into the lineup that way. But mm-hmm. I know there's certainly been rumors that teams like Ottawa, Florida, a couple others have been sniffing around. I know that there have been reports of some scouts from several teams very consistently showing up at Nationwide lately. I wouldn't be entirely shocked if something goes down at some point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things where I could certainly hear Scott Housen saying, you know, we're willing to make a deal, but we have to make sure we get a great, great return.
Yeah. Well, fourth in the division and 12th in the conference at this point, and you know, that's, I can certainly see why they'd be looking at something at making some sort of move.
Yeah, I mean, my first thought is that if they make a move in the near term here, it's going to be for the defensive back end.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually very curious about the fact that Aaron Ward is on waivers tonight, at least for those of you in the studio audience. 14th of December, and Aaron was waived this morning by Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
If he should go through waivers, and especially if he's recalled, it wouldn't shock me to see Columbus put a claim in. Mm-hmm. I think the veteran presence on that blue line, somebody who can maybe apply a little stability, might go a long way.
Right. And well, they've still got 11 teams in the, you know, in the way of that, so.
Well, sure. But on the other hand, the other thing, too, for Columbus especially, I mean, the good and bad thing about the West is that it's packed so tightly. I mean, a two-game win streak right now would propel them all the way back into a playoff spot.
Mm. That's a good point, yeah.
They're actually staying three or four together. It's going to be interesting. I think we're going to see. I don't know if we're really going to get this team together before the Olympic break. I don't know if you recall last year, they really didn't start picking up steam until January.
Mm-hmm.
They started to get some momentum going in November and December, but January was really kind of where the team hit the stride and went. If we see the same kind of thing, especially with a compressed schedule, I wouldn't be shocked to see this team put on a good bit of speed, give a run in February, possibly going into March, especially because they've got a lot of home games stacked up after the Olympic break. Something could happen.
But wouldn't you think that in a way that this team would try and do that a little bit earlier, mainly since they're virtually the same team as last year?
You'd think, but I think that the differences are just missing some key pieces in terms mm-hmm. of injuries. I think also there is a certain amount with the veteran presence that was lost with losing Michael Peck at retirement more than mm-hmm. free agency. Manny Malhotra leaving. On the one hand, I think stats-wise, Sammy Paulson has been as good or a little better as a replacement. Locker room presence, I'm starting to wonder. I think that's one of the things you have to wonder is maybe they need somebody. You know, Nash has been known to be getting a little more vocal as a captain. Maybe they need somebody who can put a little more fire under, especially with a, hey, we've been here. One of the things that is different this year is with the various turnovers, this team got an average of about 10 years younger.
Mm.
You think about that, and all of a sudden you go from being a mix of rookies and veterans to the youngest team in the league. You got to wonder how that affects things. And the other thing that's happened recently here is with Freddie Modine finally coming back to the lineup. I'm very on the fence about that because while Freddie is one of those veteran voices who may be able to provide some of that in the locker room, I think the team saw their chemistry disrupted a little bit by fitting him back in.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. With all this, with all the talk about defense and its various failings via, you know, either people or injury, how much of that is accounting for what's going on with Steve Mason right now, who, you know, was just that, you know, so incredible last season and, you know, has fairly, I mean, you know, human.
Oh, he struggled. Yeah. I think it's fair to say he struggled.
Yeah.
I think there's a mix. I would say most of the games I've watched, he's at what, about a 3-goal average right now, I think?
3.28, but it's the 8.91 save percentage is the big one that I see.
Really kind of scary, yeah. I would say, all things considered, the defense probably accounts for about two of those 3.28 goals, to be quite honest. Especially we had games like the debacle against Toronto here on December 3rd, where in one case you literally watch the Jackets on the power play, puck gets past the point, Fetter Tootin, not to single him out, but it's what happened, passed the puck directly to Matt Stajan, who leaps in on a breakaway. When your team is making plays like that in front of you, and especially when he's had a lot of problems with the defense not clearing the crease, with the defense not helping him out in preventing traffic right around the net, a lot of those goals that are being scored on him are rebounds because the defense didn't clear things out, or the defense collapsing, allowing the teams to come up from behind the goal line and kind of press in until they get the puck in the net. That said, he's made mistakes. He's had some definite issues, and I do think last year went to his head a little bit. Mm. I think the hope was that bringing in Giron was going to pressure him a little bit and kind of bring him down to earth.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the problem is after Giron got off to a bit of a hot start, he's had his own struggles, I think, right, as much as anything, also not helped by the defense. So there hasn't been as much of that push as he needed. And I had thought we were seeing him begin to recover when he got that first shutout a little bit ago. He had some really excellent positional play that game. He had some really active glove. That said, he hasn't shown that the last couple games after that. So it probably is a bit of sophomore slump. It is a bit of defense. It is a bit of, hey, look what I did last year. This is going to get easier. Well, no, it's not. And he's learning that the hard way.
No, well, what I guess my question then in the end is, you know, and obviously defense is a big part of what he preaches for responsibility, but is this a Ken Hitchcock team? I mean, I remember hearing a lot during games where Ken Hitchcock was coaching, when I would hear announcers say things like, Hitchcock's not going to like this, he's not going to like that breakdown, blah, blah, blah. You know, is this really a Ken Hitchcock team?
Good question, and I'm not entirely sure what the answer is right now.
Mm.
I think the pieces are in place for it to be a Hitchcock team when everybody is firing on their cylinders. On a lot of nights, though, I think it's a team that is trying to play a Ken Hitchcock style, but they're also trying to be a little more offensive than he necessarily is always wanting them to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've gotten burned on offensive moves. They've gotten burned on being a little too aggressive. He's trying to put that back to basics in. But I think this is actually as much to the compressed schedule this year as anything. One of the things that's been brought up, you know, the Jackets went on a 9-game skid, and because of the compressed schedule, they weren't able to hold a practice in any of those 9 games. They basically had pregame skates, and that was it. And it's not very easy for a coach who tries to emphasize that positional play, tries to emphasize system, to really be able to work with them on correcting the problems without having a couple good practices here and there.
Okay. Well, last question for you. Adam Foote finally made his return to Columbus. It took him forever and a decade. Were you at that game?
I wasn't able to make it in person, unfortunately, because of work, but I was watching it on TV.
Uh-huh. And how, your feelings, your thoughts?
I give him credit for, you know, they play hard. He certainly noticed the fact that he was being booed every time he touched the puck. I think we're at the point where the fans were making a bigger deal out of it than the players are at this point. I think the players, to their credit, mostly just tried to get up there and play a hard game. I think they got a little jobbed on Toronto waving off the tying goal with a couple minutes left. But I'm at least glad, honestly, that it's done now.
Yeah.
You know, I will continue to feel he did not leave town very gracefully, and I think he could have handled it far better than he did, and especially with the whole I'm sick for the last three times Colorado was supposed to play in Columbus after that. But, you know, now that it's finally out of the way, maybe everybody gets it out of their systems and we just finish moving on.
I guess we'll find out soon. Cool.
Yeah,
Matt, thanks.
Saturday.
Yeah. Oh, Saturday already? Is that in Columbus?
I think it's actually out at the Pepsi Center.
Okay.
I don't think they play in Columbus until the new year.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, Matt, thanks a lot. I appreciate you doing this. Matt, you're definitely a... you're on Twitter at BZ Archer. You're writing for occasionally. Who are you writing for these days?
I'm still writing for fanbase.com, but to be honest, I'm very behind due to work and life commitments getting ahead of my writing.
I understand. And you're one of the jacket backers.
Yes, sir.
All right. Cool. Thanks a lot, Matt. I appreciate it.
No problem. You have a great evening.
All right. Next up is James from Twitter. James's handle on Twitter is Bleeding Burgundy, which basically means you're an Avs fan, right?
That's right.
Oh, thank goodness. It's friendly territory for me. But as I understand, as you kind of mentioned when we first talked about you coming on, is that you're not exactly a fan of everybody on the Avs right now.
No, not at all. Particularly, I think that Wojtek Volski is probably, in my eyes, I feel that he's probably the most overrated Avalanche player at the moment, which is hard to say because, I mean, he's played, as of last night, 35 games. I believe he has 13 goals, 20 assists, so we're looking at 33 points overall, which isn't bad. I mean, he's all 1 point per night, which, you know, I feel that if you look at the numbers, you have to be pleased. But if you watch him play on a night-to-night basis, I feel overly disappointed with him. He reminds me a lot of an Alex Tanguy. All the talent in the world and just can't seem to get him, you know, get the motivation to play 60 minutes of hockey every single night. And, I mean... there are nights when he has not started to really go after the puck and make smart plays with it until the last 5 or 6 minutes of the game. And, I mean, the other night against Tampa Bay, we were there, and, you know, we were down 1-0, I don't even think we had 20 shots on goal as a team, which, you know, you might have to address as maybe a coaching issue or maybe the players just aren't buying into the system. But, you know, with 6 or 7 minutes left, he makes a great move. He scores the game tying goal, and then of course comes up as the third shooter for the shootout, and has a wonderful move and scores, which is great. It's hard not to root for that, but I mean he could be, you know, probably 10 or 12 points higher if he would just continually play hard.
Now here's a guy who, as I remember it, Joel Quenneville was not shy of benching to send a message to and say, "Hey, you need to step up your game." Is that? I personally, I hate to have to see that happen as a regular motivator. Do you think it's just a motivation that overall it's a motivation problem?
You know, last season they tried him out at his so-called natural position of center, and he played a couple games where he was really impressive as the point man and whatnot. but, you know, by the end of it, after 10 or 12 good, solid games, he started falling off. He didn't have the numbers You know, and you're following the footsteps of, you know, Joe Sakic. I mean, he played with Joe for a couple of years, and he had to have picked up something, but just didn't seem to manage to find that drive where, you know, when the game's on the line, can he really get that goal?
Hmm. Yeah.
And then the weird thing is this year he's done that a couple times. We've been down, he'll get that amazing game-winning goal or tying it up. But if you're not playing that hard the first 40 minutes or first 50 minutes, you know, why not? What's the issue is my question with him.
Yeah. No, that's...
And, you know, we sent down Chris Stewart. We sent him down, and, of course, a couple injuries happened, and he came back up. And in my eyes, I think he's played probably the best. He's probably had the best 10 games in the last 10 games of any Avalanche player.
I
think a message could be sent to him. You know, even if he went down as low as to a fourth line, but who knows.
At first, when Chris Stewart was first called up to the Avalanche, I kind of thought of him as you know, as that fourth line tough guy, you know, that kind of that counter to Cody McLeod, and he's really surprised me at how well he's played, as you know, just, you know, letting him play hockey.
Yeah, I mean, he's very much like a Cody McLeod. If I know a couple times Matt Duchene's been getting hit because he's playing, you know, first, second line guys, and they're going after him because he's a dangerous player. And man, Stewart will be right there. He reminds me a lot of he reminds me of Dan Hino, you know, just an aggressor, but willing to make a play, but much more talented, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So Wojtek Wolski, you're not overly satisfied with. Where do you stand on Marek Svatos then, who has 6 goals and 3 assists in 34 games, and he seems to be also that guy who shows a lot of promise, and you just, to me, you just want him to succeed, but then doesn't seem to.
Yeah, I mean, he's another player. It's, you know, he's got the talent, and he's got the speed, and he's got the hands, and he just, you know, he's another Alex Tanguay. He'll have 3 or 4 really good games and then go on a 10 or 15 game slump. And, you know, when you're battling for first, you know, especially right now, we're battling for first in our division with Calgary, and look at Vancouver. They're starting to make a run. The Wild, we've had problems with. I mean, they're last, but, you know, they seem to have a pretty decent system in place. You know, you're always watching Vancouver and Edmonton, that sort of thing. But, yeah, you know, if he's not going to produce, then we don't need him around. You know, we've already got those guys that, like Hannon. Scott Hannon, you know, when he played for San Jose, he was unbelievable. He would kick our ass every night. And he came here, and it was just like, I don't know if it was the system or whatnot, but he seemed to have that lack of focus or determination. I mean, he's not a super high-scoring defenseman. You know, he's not a Rob Blake or one of those guys, but, you know, when he played with San Jose, he played much better. And, you know, really, I would say that Hannon's having his best year with us, along with Adam Foote. I don't think I've seen Foote play this well in 3 or 4 years, mm-hmm. and he's really impressed me as the captain. I had some doubts as to whether it was just an honorary title sort of thing, but, you know, I can't remember who we were playing the other night, but I think Matt Duchene got hit pretty hard, and Foote came in there and just started throwing bombs. And, you know, as a defensive captain, I feel like that's the message you have to send. Like, we're going to protect our number one guys, and if you're going to go after them, we're going to come right back after you, so...
Yeah, I think it's like I think some of it's also that situation of well, not just whether or not, you know, how long Adam Foote's actually going to be with the team, but also much like when Patrick Waugh left retired and was no longer with the Avalanche, and everybody wondered who was going to take over him. I think the exact same questions are going to be asked of just about anybody as captain. You know, at least at first, how are you going to step into the shoes of Joe Sakic? And that's a tough question to ask of somebody.
Yeah. I mean, Paul Stastny, he's averaging about a point a night, I think. You know, he's got played all 35 games, 8 goals, 26 assists. So, you know, he's producing. But, I feel like he's another player that I don't know if it's just because he's so young. Maybe that's the problem with Wolski. Like, he really hasn't turned that mature corner of, you know, I'm going to score every night and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to hit guys that are in front of me. I'm going to dig after the puck. I mean, you know, he's obviously not ready to be a captain, at least in my eyes, if he's not going to play another, you know, a full 60 minutes. He kind of has that Wolski problem as well, but I'm just not as disappointed with him.
Yeah. Well, the rest of the you were mentioning Minnesota being last in the division right now, and it's a little odd to see the Vancouver Canucks, you know, sitting at 10th at this point. Yeah. You know, what else is you know, looking at the Western Conference, because you know you're a Nabs fan, you're, you know, paying attention to the Western Conference. What else is surprising you right now?
I mean, I think you look at San Jose, that obviously they're playing the way that they should play with their players, and they're staying up there in the stats. I'm really surprised with the LA Kings. I was really curious as to why Ryan Smith. I mean, obviously, I think he was going to leave, but he had his pick of teams, and he picked the Kings, and I couldn't really figure it out. But, I mean, you know, I've only got to see them play a couple games, but they've really impressed me, and I think that they're going to, no matter what seed they take in the playoffs, if they can stay above, you know, stay above the ninth overall, I think they could easily upset a Chicago or a San Jose with the way they've been playing.
Hmm. Yeah, they finally seem to have gotten their, you know, they've got that goaltending tandem that everybody thought that LaBarbera and Matthew Garon were going to be. Several years back, and they're a very young team right now. That I guess maybe Ryan Smith just saw the youth on there and said, "Hey, I know a place where my presence can really be of benefit." You know, and if with the Avalanche, I guess is in a similar situation with a lot of the younger guys that are just starting out. But I guess you go like Rob Blake said when he signed with San Jose. You know, you go where you're wanted.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Yeah. Well, the you mentioned the Sharks, and you know, right now they're number one with goals four in the conference, and number two with goals four in the league. So I guess that Danny Heatley trade is working out pretty well for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a guy who's got all the skill in the world, and you know, that could have gone probably either way. He might have gotten there, and he didn't feel the chemistry, or or whatever the case is. You know, maybe he just never felt comfortable with the guys he was playing with. But you know, they're going to be, they've got so many names that it's going to be scary to play them at any point. I'm just glad that Jordan Chichu isn't there on their team anymore. I hated playing that guy. I mean, I would love to have him, but I hate playing against him. I'll tell you that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He sometimes was really, I mean, he could be very streaky. And I think that was seriously, you know, to his career's detriment. But man, when he turned it on, he could really turn it on.
Yeah, well, and he hits hard, and he lets you know it. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes those are just good guys to have in your lineup.
Yeah. The Phoenix Coyotes are sitting sixth right now, and they have pretty much, you know, they're second in goals for second from the bottom in goals for right now, which is, of course, really hard to hold on to. That's, you know, without scoring, but they've been kind of a surprise to me.
With everything that's been going on there, I mean, I was actually just in Phoenix for Thanksgiving, and I was talking to as many Coyotes fans as I could come across, and you know, I think the feeling there is that, you know, even if they stay in Phoenix for the next couple of years. At some point, they're going to be traded to, you know, probably Quebec City or, you know, a bigger market team. I think that they struggle. They struggle with attendance. You know, they've got some really amazing players. I mean, I would take Shane Doan in a heartbeat. I don't think any team would turn him down. But, you know, it looks like he'll probably stick it out with the Coyotes for a while and see what happens. But, yeah, they've been very surprising. There could be another team that I don't know if they would really go deep into the playoffs, but they could surprise the team pretty easily as well.
On the bottom end of the spectrum, are there any teams that are surprising you? Any teams that you thought were going to be better that aren't, or, you know, any teams that are just so woefully bad and you never thought they'd be that bad? Or,
well, I mean, yeah, I think you have to, for me as an Avs fan, you have to immediately target the Red Wings. I mean, they had a lot of they lost a lot of players during the off season, and, you know, they still have some very good players, but. Luckily for me and the rest of the Avs fans out there, you know, they're struggling. They're getting hurt a lot. It seems that every night they're losing a guy for, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks, and that's just detrimental to a team. I mean, you can't constantly have your minor league teams carry you when you're playing against, you know, a tough Western Conference. You know, when you're playing teams like L.A. and San Jose and Chicago and teams like that. So,
yeah.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, they can stay at the bottom and I'll just point my finger and laugh. So.
Yeah, the one that actually surprised me as much is the Anaheim Ducks. They just I'm just surprised that they're as, I hate to say it, but as bad as they are right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I hate to throw this in the mix, but look at the Avs last year. I mean, I think that we actually had a decent core of guys, and it was just one of those things where night after night they really couldn't win those one goal games. You know, where they were just down by one. You know, and that's something that the Avs this year have totally turned around. They're coming back and they're tying it up and they're getting at least a point or they're winning, and. You know, the Ducks are just one of those teams. I think that they've got a bunch of good guys too, but it's just not their year. So,
yeah. Are you able to make it to many games down at the Pepsi Center? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I've actually been to quite a number of games. I mean, I was there on Wednesday night. I was there on Friday night. I'm going tomorrow night against the Washington Capitals. I mean, I feel that if you get a chance to see Ovechkin play. You have to go see, you know, what all the hubbub's about. So
oh, it's worth it. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see why it wouldn't be just impressive to watch, you know, a guy like that. I mean, I saw Pittsburgh last year with Crosby and Malkin, and, you know, lo and behold, the Avs actually beat that team. But, you know, those are, you know, that's a team that you, when the Eastern Conference comes here, I feel like you have to go. I mean, I'll go see the Rangers. I'll go see the Devils. I saw, you know, I saw Philly. So, yeah, I've been to quite a number of games, and you know, I don't know what's going on with Denver and the attendance with the Avalanche team, but, you know, I wish people would wake up and realize that they can get some cheap tickets. I mean, I know Stan Kroenke is very quietly selling lower ring tickets for half price. I mean, you can see a good hockey game and really good seats for $50-$60, and I feel that that's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Sunday, December 13th against the Calgary Flames. It was 11,448. That's pretty low.
That's really low for a battle for first place against the unknown. Unknown division rival. We've always played well against them. They've always played well against us. You hardly see, you know, that huge blowout, or they're always close games. And, I mean, Jerome McGinley, Mikko Kiprusoff. I mean, these are guys you want to go see play.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I know a lot of this has to do with the economy, and that sucks. But, You know, if you've got $20 to spend at the bar, you've got $20 to go see an Avalanche game. So wake up, Denver fans. Get out there, support your team.
We'll make it
to the playoffs, and I think we'll do rather well.
I'm wondering if that's what it's going to take to turn people back around, just kind of the, you know, for there to be some proof in that pudding, you know, after hearing that rebuilding word enough times.
Well, you know, rebuilding, you know, I think when people say that, they immediately think, oh, you know, damn, it's going to be 3-4 years before we have a good team. But look at the Denver Broncos. They were in a pretty much a rebuilding year, started off 6-0. I mean, they're struggling, you know, a little bit, but they're still in the hunt. And damn, if I've ever seen Mile High only take in, you know, a third of the attendance, so... Hmm. I don't know what it is. This is a good hockey town. There are a lot of fans out there. And, you know, I think that somehow something needs to happen where people get on board before the playoffs. I think it would make it better. I mean, the Avs have been a really good road team and somewhat mediocre at home. And if you can be a good road team and you can be a damn tough home team, then, you know, that's how you win Stanley Cup championships right there.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, the first one that the Avs won, they won on the road. So,
yep.
Yeah. Well, James, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I love your program. It's definitely the highlight of my week whenever I get to listen to a new podcast. So
I'm sorry for your week then. That must be a pretty bad week.
Well, you know, between you, like you and Adrian Data for the Denver Post, I've got my hands filled with know-it-all hockey guys. So
cool. Thanks a lot, James. Of course, on Twitter, you're Bleed Burgundy, correct?
That's right.
Correct. Awesome. Thanks a lot, man.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
That does it for this week's episode of The Rink. You can always find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find out how to subscribe on iTunes, find links to my guests' Twitter feeds, and comment on anything that you heard here. You can email The Rink at rink@rinkpodcast.com, and you can call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Thanks for listening to The Rink.